Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode. On behalf of Disciple of City, I'm Todd Carlton, and this is the Toddcast. Friends, Disciple of City exists to equip and encourage Christians with simple tools to share the gospel. And in 2025, we have something really big planned for this initiative. Follow Disciple of City on social media and check out our website at discipleofcity.ca. And stay tuned for what's in store. You can follow this podcast on Instagram at @Toddcast_DAC. And please subscribe to the show on whatever platform you're listening to. I'd also love to hear your thoughts, so send me an email at information@discipleofcity.ca. Well, my friends, we are ending the third season, and to close us out, I have in the studio with me a man who has been making music since he was in high school. He's the founder and former frontman of Hawk Nelson and performed with them from 2002 to 2012. Since then, he's been releasing singles and EPs, including 2024's Starting Over. He's heading back out on the road to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Letters to the President. Please welcome Jason Dunn.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, bro.
Thanks for having me on your Toddcast.
Thanks for coming out, dude.
It's the perfect name.
Great to have you. It's not a bad name.
It's a great name.
I didn't come up with it.
Like, imagine your name was like Bill. I just like the Bill cast. It just doesn't work. This is your calling in life, man.
You're heading out onto the road in 2025. I didn't even read my own notes there. I missed that.
You read it, but it's like it didn't make sense to you. Yeah, it's like I'm leaving in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, awesome. Well, after Christmas.
After Christmas, yeah.
Got to stay home for Christmas.
Gotta.
It's awesome. We got this right in the machine here.
That's an impeccable machine.
It's pretty good.
Lights, it's just drawing me in.
It's hard for me to pay attention to guests.
I would
not
get
look.
Nothing done with that thing right there. What does that purple one do?
Purple one?
Oh, now you've got to try. You don't even know what that button does, do you?
I do.
Oh, you do?
You want to hear the purple one?
I do.
Here's the purple one.
Nice. That's a good choice.
You know that song.
No, I don't.
You don't?
No.
I didn't know it either.
Give me till the chorus and I'll probably get it.
Yeah, I'll give you a second.
I'm also not 70, so. Sorry, I didn't. Why am I being so mean?
It's not that old. These guys are still kicking and touring and making music. Adam Shepsky introduced me to this. They were out the same time as my friends back here.
Hmm.
You can tell what decade it is with this intro.
It certainly is 80s, but...
Let's go. Maybe we'll just play music.
I mean...
The whole episode.
Oh, is this Christian?
Yes. Yellow and black.
See... Oh, Striper,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Like, when I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to listen to any like music, basically, but I couldn't even listen to like this kind of music.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Adam introduced me to them. You know Adam Shepsky.
I do.
Yeah. He's really, I don't know if you've seen him, like he's super excited right now.
Like right now?
Yeah, like right now he's super stoked and excited because
he's just... Is he on the way to Dominican or somewhere like that?
No, he just came back from Europe, but he's like such a winter guy. He was so stoked to come home and see that we got hammered with snow and we're going to get crushed this weekend, so he's so
like
happy.
That sounds like some sort of sick joke. Who loves winter? Raise your hand.
Adam
Nobody?
Shepsky.
Okay.
His
Adam
hands Shepsky. Way up. And cats. Anyway.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so we've covered a lot. 80s, snow, Dominican, Striper.
Mm-hmm.
And Letters to the President. So, dude, again, thanks for coming. And, would love to talk about, what you're doing next year with the 20th anniversary for that. But just to start us off, first of all, how did you, did you grow up in the church? Like, what was your sort of background in faith as a kid?
Yeah, I mean, you want to start at the very beginning?
Yeah, like just like, did you grow up in the church or not?
I did. I was about 5 years old. Prior to that, my parents were not saved. They weren't Christians. And I like this story because I've actually been sharing it with my own kids. So my parents moved to a house where I was born in. I grew up in Peterborough, downtown. And we had a neighbor, an old old lady and old man that lived next door to us, and they were Christians. And my family, we were a bit of a rough family. You know what I mean when I say that? Just like that, we were that family. Like my dad was, you know, he was a struggling alcoholic, a drug user. And basically, they just invited my mom to go to church. And my dad was like, no way, don't go to church. And my mom ended up going with their other neighbor. And together, my mom and her friend on the other side, they both got saved at this church meeting. And my dad basically lost it. And it was one of those undercover. My dad would go to work. So my mom with, I guess at this point, there was three young kids in the house. Me being one of them, she would be watching like, what was it, like the 700 Club or one of those shows on TV. That was her church because she could watch that while my dad was away and kind of grow in her faith. And that was that. And then my younger brother, Caleb, he was born with a hole in his heart. And the doctors didn't really have an answer on how they could correct it or fix it or whatever. It was just kind of like the waiting game. Let's see what happens as he gets older, if it corrects itself. But anyways, long story short, one morning my mom was folding laundry, and on the TV screen, the guy on the screen was like, hey, there's someone watching right now. God is healing your son from a hole in his heart.
Come on.
And you know how the story goes. My mom took him to the doctor the next week or whatever, and he's like, there's no hole. So my dad could not deny the fact that God had healed his son. So my dad literally cold turkey quit everything, became this righteous zealot. Both my parents were, they were like legit saved. Like there was a full transformation that took place. And it was noticeable from all their friends. Like they quit everything, and their former friend group was gone. They were just plugged into church. So I don't remember that early part like I do today. So I remember going to church like 5 days a week. Was kind of like my upbringing. My dad, like, they jumped headfirst into church. So like they volunteered everywhere. They were like, my dad was a rocker. He was like you, Todd, like loved rock and roll. Like, he was a rocker. He played in the band. But you know, that era where like you burned your records, you distortion was of the devil. Like he got rid of his guitars and he got rid of his albums.
Wow.
And, so we were, you know, I'm a little upset, but we were deprived of good music as kids because, you know, that's the way it was. Till we got a little bit older. I remember my dad, when I was about 11, my mom got him an electric guitar again for like his birthday or whatever. And you know, real music was weaved back into our lives, you know? But that was my upbringing. So in the church a lot, all my friends were like the Christian kids. They took us out of public school, put us into Christian school. So we were deep in it, man. Like there was that's all we knew, me and all my siblings. That's all we knew.
So did you have a moment like, well, first of all, that's pretty heavy when you do that, burn stuff and throw everything out. For me, it wasn't. My thing was pretty intense too, like my conversion, you know, but it was more like biblically pruning the branches, where there was just certain music that I never felt like I needed to burn stuff, but there was certain music that I just didn't need to listen to, or just kind of grieve the spirit, actually, I guess.
A heart thing more being told to do that, you know. And I get that was a big thing in like the 90s, like come to the front, burn your CDs, you know. That was a big thing. So
yeah. And toxic, eh? That smoke is toxic. Like, that's really bad.
It's an interesting approach.
It is. So as you grew up, was there a moment like between that and when you started the band? Because I know you guys started Hawk really super young. Was there a moment where you drifted at all, or were you pretty solid in your faith right up into the band and everything?
Man, I thought I was. Like, again, when that's all you know, you kind of, that's it. So you just... Do you ever get the thing where you just say things because that's just what you say? And I think that was a big thing for me. Like you go from being in like a, you know, you play in the youth group band. You're like the worship leader in your band is a 15-year-old. And I remember for us, when we first started our band, like we'd ask our youth leader. I don't know if you know, do you know Rick Kirshner?
Do I know Rick? I don't.
So Rick's been gone. He's been out in Alberta for a long time now, but so we grew up in the Selwyn Church. That's where we all got our start. And So we were the youth band, and we'd ask our youth pastor, Rick, like, hey, would it be cool? Like, you know, it's church. The service starts at 7. If we like could plug in at 6:30, we can play all of our original stuff. Well, just while the people are coming in, you know, that was our way of like getting heard, you know? So he's like, yeah, sure. Bring your stuff. So we would just start playing our own stuff. And then 7 o'clock, he's like, okay, guys, that's enough. Let's start church now, you know? So then we just play out our worship songs and whatever. But, it became like this as we transferred into Hawk Nelson, and we would play anywhere and everywhere, you know. And then when it kind of became our job or whatever, a lot of, I guess they were fans. We built a good fan base, but they would all have like, they'd be dealing with stuff. And rather than talking to therapists or their youth pastors or youth leaders, they'd come to guys in bands like, hey, I'm struggling with suicide. What do I do? We weren't equipped for that, right?
Yeah.
And it was a lot of pressure, and it was scary. And I actually knew what to tell them, and you would just give them advice that probably maybe was healthy or helpful, but a lot of times probably wasn't. I remember a couple times, I remember saying to them, you won't do it. That's not a good response to someone that's struggling with suicidal thoughts. But at the same time, I was 19 years old. Like,
yeah.
I'd never dealt with that kind of stuff before, but that caught up with me, and people were struggling with stuff for real. And rather than going to therapists, they'd go to their favorite band or whatever. And that kind of, it caught up with me and ate at me for a long time.
Like feeling like you said the wrong thing.
Yeah, for sure. And then you see like, oh, I haven't heard from that person in a while. Like, is everything okay? And that happened a lot. But not only that, but like just questions of faith. And then you'd give them answers that probably weren't theologically sound or true. You just kind of say what you think is right or what you remember hearing someone say, probably not even close to being what was the right thing to say, because we weren't prepared.
And you guys are on your own faith journey too, as you're growing and stuff.
And not to mention when we were on the road, suddenly you're not connected to a church anymore. You know, our youth pastor Rick would keep up with us for like the first 6 months or whatever, but when you're out on the road for 8-9 years without stopping, you know, you kind of lose the connection, right? And so you're not going to church. You're not growing in your faith. You're giving, giving, giving without getting anything back. And that ended up, you don't realize it till you look back, you know, and you're like, wow, okay. That actually makes sense why we kind of drifted. And it was not a quick switch. It was just one of those things that it builds over time, right? And then I think that's what happened. I mean, speaking from my own experience, that's what happened to me. And it got bad as I got older.
Yeah. So as in your youth group, your youth band, so that was all the OG guys. That was Dan and Maddie and Dave. Like, we're all part of that, or
me, Matt, and Dave. Yeah. Daniel didn't join till way later.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what was that like when you guys? Like, usually you hear bands talk about how it just sort of happens. How did Hawk just sort of happen for you guys?
Yeah, so we, our little youth band we grew up in, like the church band, we call it, we called ourselves Swish. That's its own story. It didn't really matter. And then
the company took your name.
Yeah, and then we got sued selling. And yeah. no, we just that's just what we went by, and we just literally will play anywhere. We'd, any youth event, we'd show up and play like the little, you know, talent shows, and we'd go like out to Quebec and just do youth events. Like, but it was always like, hey, would you guys come and lead worship? And that was, I was like, I don't want to lead. I want to, like, we got all these songs, we want people to hear them. So we'd do the same approach, like, yeah, can we play, you know? So we'd do like a youth night, and okay, you guys can do a couple songs, but then lead our youth group and worship. Like, okay, fine. Like, I hated it. I wanted to be a punk band, you know? And, but the stage that was given to us was, we want you to lead our youth group and worship. So, we'd won a battle of the bands, and we got some free recording time at a studio here locally. Sorry, not locally. It was out of town, and it was this guy that had done work for bands like Thousand Foot Crutch and like the bands that were massive to us growing up. So we're like, oh man. So this studio was like 3 hours away. And so we were all excited. We had all the songs prepared for what we were going to record. Like, I think we won like 5 free hours of recording. We're like, bro, we can knock 15 songs out, you know? So then as we were preparing all the songs, and we had a call with the producer or whatever, and he's like, okay. He's like, so can you send me the BPMs for these songs? We're like, what's a BPM? Like, you guys aren't playing to a click track or like a metronome? We're like, a what? He's like, guys, I can't have you come into the studio if you don't play to a metronome. So, like, we had our van loaded, ready to drive 3 hours to go for the weekend to the studio. We had, like, hotels booked and ready to go. And we're like, and he basically told us we couldn't go till we were prepared. And, like, we are prepared. Just let us plug in and go. Like, that's what we did. But so that was kind of a real, like, it put a damper. We're like, okay. So our band literally broke up that night.
Oh, really?
Our bass player was like, honestly, guys, I don't really want to do this anyways. I want to go to college and get a post-secondary education. We're like, what? But what about the band? Like, but we had played everywhere, and there's another band at a Barry called the Cheese Monkeys from Planet Nine, and their lead singer's name was Daniel Bureau.
That's a great name.
Daniel Bureau, it is a great name.
No, the
Cheese Monkeys from Planet Nine. Daniel Bureau's a great name, also a great name. Yeah, so Dan was like, hey, he's like, if you guys are really serious, like, I would learn bass to play with you guys. So I was like, hey, are you serious? Like, all right. So he ended up moving to Peterborough, bought a bass off of Joel from TFK, and started learning to play bass. And he'd show up to practices. And like, no, he just hit that fret there. And he would just slide up the neck to find the notes. And that's how we started. And he was like, Dan kind of was like, he thought more like a businessman, where I thought more of like, let's just write songs and let's just play, you know? And he's like, well, we should probably just start fresh. Let's get a band name and let's write a whole bunch of brand new songs and approach this as like a thing. Like, do you still want to be doing like worship nights? And I was like, or do you want to actually do it? I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like, I don't want to do like youth groups. I want to play punk songs again. Like, I want that to be our thing. So we hit halt and we went for it. Wrote a bunch of songs together, and we did call ourselves, our band, we called ourselves Reason Being. It was just a random name I came up with. And we legitimately got an email from a band saying they were going to sue us because there was another band called Reason Being, which apparently no one had ever heard of. As I think back, I'm pretty sure as a little kid I saw a tour bus or a band that said Reason Being spray paint on the side. I'm pretty sure that's where I got the name from. So we had to go back to square one. We sat around my parents' dining room table, and we threw out a bunch of random band names. And Hawk Nelson was a name I came up with for a video game character for a snowboarding guy. Hawk Nelson, it just seemed like a right name for a snowboarder.
It does seem like a right name.
So I just threw it into the mix, and as weird as it is, that was the best name we could come up with. And so we went with it, and it lasted till, I don't know if the name is still going or what, but it was the name for the longest time.
Yeah.
And we didn't play churches anymore. We just played our songs, and it was a great thing.
Started playing gigs. So did you end up going back to that same recording studio, or did you record somewhere else?
No, never ever went there. I don't even know what it was like.
Yeah.
I don't even remember that was the question you asked me, Todd. I just started rambling.
Yeah. No, that's good.
What was I talking about again?
So when you guys started, so you recorded your first album. And all brand new songs and stuff like that. And then what's that push like?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we recorded that in Barrie with a guy named Jeff Wardell, who was actually Daniel lived in Jeff's basement. He rented from him in Barrie. And Jeff was getting his studio fired up, and he recorded a lot of bands locally in Barrie. And so Dan was like, yeah, you've got to meet this guy. So we met him, and it was awesome. Jeff's like the coolest guy ever. It's almost as cool as you, Todd. And, yeah, we went in and recorded, and we did like an 8-song EP called Saturday Rock Action, where at that time in life, like Creed and Nickelback were coming out with all these awesome songs. You said you were a fan of Nickelback, but you said it kind of like Nickelback, like you were kind of embarrassed to say it.
Hey, people don't like them. I don't care. I like them.
Dude,
I've seen them.
Bangers.
Oh, yeah.
I'll listen to Nickelback all day.
They are way heavier than people think.
I know.
And their live shows are full of pyro and heavy.
Yeah, I want you to know I felt your pain there. When we were talking pre-show here, I felt like you were self-conscious to say Nickelback. And I want you to know I'm standing with you on this. Like, it's okay.
Haters going to hate.
Haters going to hate. Yeah. And I actually am a fan of Nickelback. So whatever to everyone that hates Nickelback. Shame on you.
Yeah,
you should be
shame
ashamed
on you.
Of yourself.
Celebrate Canadian, man. Come
Chad,
on.
Chad Kroeger should be on the $20 bill there. Anyways, I was a fan of all those bands. And so we like had this like weird like pop punk kind of sound. But I was like transferring my inner Chad Kroeger voice. So I started like growling on every song. And it was only for like a 6 month phase of my life. It happened to be during that time we recorded. I'd love to listen back to that EP because it's bad. I was like, why are you singing like Scott Stapp and Chad Kroeger right now? But anyways, that was that. And then Trevor McNeven, I'm not sure if you know Trev or not.
I know Trev, yeah.
He's also a fantastic human being.
He's a good dude. He's a good dude.
So Trevor was very close with us growing up. He was like a huge mentor for me growing up. I have always regarded Trev as a big brother. He was like, you know, from the time I was 12 years old, TFK were like, they were like the band we wanted to be like. And them being a local band, we went to the same church together, went to the same school together. But I know thou shalt have no other gods before thee. I know, but I idolized Trevor McNeven. I wanted to be him. And, well, I kind of still want to be him. But anyways, every time they were on the road, I was like, man, they're playing like all these massive festivals. This was before like the internet. So we couldn't keep up with them on social media, but I didn't know till he'd come home with his digital camera and show us these shots of like these concerts he was at. And there'd be like 20,000 people in like the crowd. I'm like, that's you on stage. I'm like, this is crazy. Like my mind was blown. And he's like, well, what are you guys working on here? And we showed him our EP, and I kind of regret that now. He's like, did you get Scott Stapp to feature on this? I'm like, no, that's actually me.
Did he really say that?
Yeah, I said it. No, he didn't really say that. But I'm like, okay. I sang like that for a few weeks, and we just captured that moment in life. It's amazing. But the thing about it, he was like, the songs were garbage. Like, he's not going to say that to a bunch of, like, 18-year-old kids, but he saw the dedication, and I was in high school still, and the other guys, I was the youngest, so the other guys had all graduated, but we were taking our summer job money and putting it into our band account that we had created, and he saw, like, that we were, like, we weren't just a bunch of kids going to take a stab at it and just kind of hope for it, and he saw that we were literally willing to do anything it took, so I think he saw that, and he pushed us into getting like a photo shoot done and do it properly. And then he took our EP to Brandon Ebel at Tooth & Nail Records because his band TFK, as well as his other project FM Static, had just signed with Tooth & Nail Records. And if you're a Christian kid, like Tooth & Nail Records was like the mecca. That's what every Christian kid wants to sign to that record label, right? MXPX, get out of here, like. So he took it to Brandon Ebel at Tooth & Nail Records, and Brandon's like, I could see these guys being like the Christian Good Charlotte. And I was like, that's a thing? I'm like, I just want to be a comparable Good Charlotte. I don't want to be the Christian version, but okay, tell us what we need to do to make that happen. So he's like, Trevor, if you work with these guys, put together a different EP that's not Creed or Nickelback. What's wrong with Nickelback? And, you know, so... So Trev did it. He took us under his wing for like a year, and he took us on a first tour with them. We got to open for, so FM Static played like 20 minutes. Then Trev would switch his shirt. Well, we played for 25 minutes. Then TFK would come on, and we did that for like, I think it was a month long tour across Canada. And that was our first introduction to touring.
So
and
that was touring those songs from your first EP or other stuff?
No,
that you
this
wrote?
Is stuff. So Trev spent like the first 8 months writing the Letters to the President album with us.
Okay.
And then we took the ones that we were comfortable with, and it was 20 minutes. So I talk a lot, Todd. So I think we got probably 2.5 songs on that set and I'd be chatting, you know? So yeah, we work on a few songs here, and Brandon was like, yeah, this is good. This is great. Keep going. And so after that tour, we flew to Seattle, Washington to work with Aaron Sprinkle, who had, you know, done every album that I grew up listening to, like Life in General, you know, all the MXPX classics. And we got to work with him, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great when somebody will offer to help out too, right? Like to see you got your ambition, your dedication, and help you out. So, dude, as you guys started to tour, that album Letters to the President starts rolling. Did even though it's Christian or whatever, it's the Christian scene or Christian festivals or whatever, it's still like you're an artist and you're performing and there's fans and everything and the vibe is similar, right? So like, did that impact your faith in any way? Did you sort of like, I mean, you'd be so focused on your art, right?
Oh yeah.
Did that impact your faith in any way? Or
yeah, what? And This was a big effect on my walk with Christ too, because like I said, we were the youth group band, like we were just the youth group worship band. We were just kids that grew up in that, and it was literally it was all I knew, and I know I can say that on behalf of all of us that grew up in the church, like three of us that grew up together in the band. That's all we knew. So I had learned early on, if you say the right thing at the right time in your set, those shirts are going to fly off your table. If you mention Jesus, hey, we're here tonight, you know, just to give glory to Jesus. The more you repeat that every night, that should be a great thing for your heart, but actually it just kind of became repetitive and redundant and kind of fake. You're like, wow, okay, that works. So I'm going to take that and use that tomorrow night. And maybe if I can just twist it and add an extra thing, we'll see how that does. And that's what happened to me. And it just got really old, and it jaded me a lot faster than I think I realized. And again, I didn't realize any of this till I was gone. I'm like, that made a big difference in my life for sure.
Like, just like, did it grieve your? Well, you say you didn't realize that till you left the band.
I had no idea. And then I think it's weird, man. Too as you read, I mean, I read a lot of things. I mean, I'm not sure how familiar you are with. I don't even know if Hognell's is still going, but the current, once I left, when Jonathan took over my role, I saw he went through the exact same thing, and his faith shattered and crumbled immediately, or a couple of years in. I did it for over 10 years, and he did it, for 3 years. But like the way I've just by hearing what he said were all the things that I said, but I said it internally to our team. I didn't say it out front to the public. And it crushed him, and it crushed the current Hawk Nelson. And it broke my heart for the guy, because when I had those questions, I mentioned them to the band, and Jonathan had the answer for every one of my questions. And suddenly his questions were the exact same question I had, but he lost the answer. And, you see that not just with the current Hawk Nelson, but other artists. You see Christian artists, Christian worship leaders that have fallen off the deep end because they've suddenly lost their way, because it catches up with you real quick when you end up doing it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And I did it for the wrong reasons without realizing I was doing it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. So yeah, you know what? It's hard because You just wanted to be in a punk band, like how you said, right? And I mean, there's different between being a Christian band, or you're a bunch of Christians in a band, than being someone who's like writing worship songs.
Yeah,
right. Like that. I mean, that's a difference. So,
and the tension is too, Todd. Like when I went in there initially, we're like, we're just a band. We're gonna do our thing. We're gonna give them 20 minutes of our best stuff. That was our whole intent. And then suddenly you get the feedback. Everyone loves to talk. The loudest ones are always the people with the opinions. How we are, these guys aren't even a Christian band. They didn't mention anything about Jesus. And so those ones hurt. You're like, oh, shoot. Like, okay. So maybe we need to focus in a bit more so we don't upset those people. But honestly, those people are usually one or two people.
Yeah.
I work at a church now, and it's all those people that say you should do that, it's always one person.
Yeah.
The majority of the people aren't going to say anything, but it's always the one person is always the loudest.
Yeah.
And I learned that as an adult. I wish I knew that as an 18 or 19 year old kid. I think life would be very different today had I thought like that.
And you know what? It's kind of a shame is that you know, there's nothing wrong to me, anyways, in my opinion, of just being a group of Christians who are in a band and just write songs. You're not necessarily singing about Jesus, but if your heart is with him, then your music is going to be about life or whatever, but it's going to be like, I don't know if clean is the right word, but you know how I was talking earlier about when I came to faith, God pruned the branches, right? So there were certain bands that were really dark that I used to love that I didn't like. I didn't really like or want to listen to anymore because the darkness wasn't in me anymore.
Yeah.
That's actually when I had not heard of TFK before that.
This interview is over. Did you know who Nickelback was? Okay, a few.
But I discovered TFK after I came to faith. And even though the song's like not singing about Jesus, right? But it resonated with me because... like there was underlying tones, I guess, in it and stuff. There's nothing wrong with that, right?
Here's the thing I love about music, and it doesn't have to be Christian music. There is always some sort of spiritual influence behind anything to do with music.
Yeah.
Music was created by God, and you can listen to songs. Like it's on the record, but I'm not embarrassed to say it. I've heard country music songs where I start crying, like my eyes start watering just thinking about this song, and it's, I don't even know what the lyrics are about, but I'm like, this song actually reminds me of my grandparents. And I don't even know what the song or the lyric is about, but there's something powerful about music where it touches your emotional side as well as your spiritual side. And when you can hone that into for the song or your spirit behind the song to be not about Jesus, but to Jesus, there's something powerful about that.
Yeah.
We can go deep into this rabbit hole, man, but that's
Well, you know what? When you're writing songs that are from the heart, right? Then yeah. It's just like you say. So for you, dude, I know, so I've had Maddie was on the show. I've had Dan on the show as well. So when, you know, you guys went and did all these big tours and stuff, and I know for Maddie, he shared, you know, just life and just different things and stuff. So what led you, well, kind of two questions.
Side note, you should have us all in here together. I'd love that.
That would be cool.
That would be unbelievable. All right.
Matt, Dan, let's do that. Get Davey in here. Trev.
Chad Kruger? No. That's too
Scott. We'll get Scott in here. You guys could sing together. So kind of two questions, dude. What led up to you, if you'll share, of why you left the band? And then kind of a side note, just a curiosity for me. How do all the members leave the band and the band still has the same name and carries on?
That's a great question.
Because it's not like Van Halen where one guy leaves and they get a new singer. This is like you guys are like three down.
You want to know the easy answer to that? Because I never used to have a backbone. That's why. I hated my life. I disagreed with everything that we were doing. I became jaded to faith. I don't even think I had faith at that point. I questioned everything. I was cynical towards church. I was cynical towards faith. There was a point where on stage, I would stop talking about even saying God or Jesus. I would refer to God as a higher power because I was like, this, I don't even think this is even true anymore. That's how it all came about. And then we changed management. We had the same manager for so long, and then some shady dealings went down. So we fired our manager. We got a new manager that was our former road manager, but he'd never managed a band before. And I was like, this does not feel right. And honestly, Todd, we had kind of plateaued in like 2008, 2009 maybe. And so we were just kind of, I could feel us plummeting as a career. Like our success, we weren't as successful as we once were. Our first two albums had done really, really well. And so we kind of figured, like, okay, so the next one's going to do even better than the first two, but it didn't, and we paid a lot more money for that. Pretty sure we're still paying for that recording, by the way. I don't know for sure, but I think that one hurt, and I just think we weren't as successful as we once were, and so I was a little nervous, and then I was still trying to do everything and anything to be as best as we could. One of my life goals was to get on a Warped Tour. Nobody else wanted to go on Warped Tour, so they talked me out of it. And I was like, okay. And I just say okay to everything, and I would always take a no from the band. And rather than be like, no, let's do this, I would just take it. And that wasn't their fault. That was my own fault. I should have stood up for myself and stood up for what I believed in. It's something that I had always preached growing up as a teenager. Like, stand for what you believe and stand for your rights and, you know, be punk about it. But I was just like, okay. And I just... cower into a corner. And I think eventually just, I think I just broke and just ended up, you know, when you build up and then you just kind of snap, that's exactly what happened to me. And it still happens to me from time to time, just in my own personal life. But that is something I've learned as a parent, as a husband, and as a church leader. You have to communicate. And I was not a good communicator as a kid, as a teenager, even as an early adult, I was a terrible communicator. Working for a church has really helped me to learn that. And I've become a way better human being as a result of that. But anyways, I think I snapped on everyone and just, it was a rage quit. That's what it was. I sent a big email like, hey guys, let's not talk about January touring. I'm like, I'm going to wrap it up at the end of the year. So that's that. That was basically my email. So then we had a big band meeting in our hotel room in Columbus, Ohio, in the fall. Like, hey, this doesn't go out. You need to, let's try to figure this out. And I'm like, no. And that's, and then, basically it was a rage quit. Daniel or Ryan, our manager, had come to my house, tried to talk me into doing it. I'm like, sorry, man, I'm done. I was already starting to write my own music. I'm going to put out a solo album. Cause at that point, City and Color had just come out. Dallas Green had done this little side thing when he didn't leave Alexis on Fire, but they took a bit of a hiatus or whatever. And he did City and Color. I'm like, that's actually pretty cool. And I was kind of a fan of that for a bit. So I was like, I'm just going to do something like that. And then Dan and I, we went for a walk in Memphis, Tennessee. He's like, hey man, like, are you thinking about what you're doing? And again, this is not having a backbone thing. I felt bad for the band. Like, well, cause basically we had, I don't know, 12 employees, which that's a lot of people losing their jobs. So I was like, well, hey, I don't know. Just, why don't you just ask Jonathan to sing? And I was just trying to be like, figure he'd be like, no, we can't do that. This is your band. Like, you started this. But instead he's like, oh yeah, I'll ask him. I'm like, oh shoot. So it kind of backfired on me. But so John took over and I was like, dang it. Like, why did I even say that? Like, that was such a stupid thing to request. But, that's how it unfurled. And then I think I was pretty upset about that without telling people I was upset about it. And I think I just harbored a lot of bitterness, but then I was like, okay, whatever. So they'll continue Hawk Nelson as Hawk Nelson. So I'll just do a little acoustic solo thing. So I wrote a bunch of acoustic songs, flew to Vancouver, recorded a whole album. I think I did 13 or 14 songs, which was done very poorly, by the way. It was not City and Color at all. And when I got all the mixes back, and I spent way too much money to get that done independently. And I kind of chatted with Brandon Ebla to them, like, would you be interested in putting this out? And he didn't say no, but he said no without saying no. And then suddenly Hawk started getting their new album done. And then I was listening to, I heard one or two songs. I'm like, oh, this is like Imagine Dragons. I'm like, this isn't like Hawk Nelson at all. So then I was kind of mad. I'm like, oh, they're taking my name and like they've tainted the name. I'm like, shoot. So I'm like, well, that sucks. But that was that. So then, okay, well, I'm going to bring my pop punk sound back. So I started a band in New York called Lights Go Down, which is a full pop punk EP. I think it was four or five songs.
That's it's interesting, dude, that of where this thing went, where all you wanted to do was just do a punk band and you do it. And then along the way, you kind of lose your faith. And then you end up like, it was very raw of you to share, but of just like hating your life of where you were at when meanwhile you're doing what you wanted to do as a career. But it's interesting, eh? How that happens. How did you find your way back with the Lord? Like, as you start recording, because I'm looking at the Spotify here, there's all kinds of EPs and songs that you released, like right away, 213, Insecurity, 2015, 2017. Like, so you were doing stuff, but what was the journey like finding your way back to faith?
So, I mean, there's a lot to be said about that. There's a lot to unfold here. So when you leave a band that has a certain amount of success to suddenly dropping off the face of the earth, like I know for a fact because they were told I was, I tried to get erased from, like, you know, all, anything with that involved me was taken down. And I get, as an adult, I understand that from a business perspective, like, they're starting over, but with the same name. So how do you start over with something that I had created and built for 10 years? That legacy, I know, and I get it. They tried to erase it, but it just didn't happen. And I understand both sides, but, to start fresh, as a solo independent artist with no team behind you was really, really hard. It was actually impossible. And I really felt that. And it took a toll on my mental health, my life. I was married. I was married briefly for about 5 years at a young age. I got married and, it didn't work for obvious reasons. I mean, I just quit my career and had nothing to fall back on. It was tense from the gate, but she had, she worked for MTV. She had a pretty successful career there and was like, okay, well, I'm moving to New York. It was like, you can do what you want, but I'm moving to New York. And I was like, well, yeah, I got to save this marriage. So yeah, we'll leave Nashville and we'll move to New York. So I moved to New York and, we're really fighting. I was fighting to keep that marriage alive. You know, it didn't work. I can say that with openly. But that wrecked my whole life too. So I had no band, no career, no job, no wife, trying to figure that whole bit out. Showing up, trying to take any gig I possibly could to make a few bucks. And so you're going from making basically, I was salaried in Hawk Nelson to suddenly like, yeah, you can come out here. We'll give you $200. I'm like, oh, this is the new reality. And I was embarrassed. I think that showing up with my guitar, like, okay, can you play this? I'm like, I don't actually think I even know how to play this song, but I would be playing all these new songs I'm working on and nobody wanted to hear those. They wanted to hear California. They wanted to hear Letters to the President. They wanted to hear the stuff I was known for. And I'm trying to play songs that nobody cared about. And, it was really frustrating to say the least. And, I was just, yeah, it was very weird to go from riding around in a tour bus in luxury to loading up my pickup truck to drive 8 hours to play for, in a living room to like six people. Like that's a whole different thing. And it was really, really difficult. But, basically I had no faith at this point. I was in myself or God. I hadn't gone to church in years. Like that wasn't even an option for me. So I'd be trying to get home as much as I could and camp out in my parents' basement to avoid life basically. At this point, my ex-wife is like, okay, I'm moving to California. She's like, I got a gig there. She's like, you can come or not. And I was like, okay, this is, I kind of see the trend here. This is going to be every few months. I'm going to be following her around. And I'm like, I can't do this. So I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to stay in New York. I had some money saved up. I'm like, I'm just going to stay and just see what happens. So she moved away and I stayed, Airbnb being our apartment in New York so I could pay for it. Like it was bad. Also recording this EP, we kept it a live EP by Lights Go Down. That was kind of the only thing that kept my attention and it kept my mind off of life. But it was a bad look for me, man. I was in rough shape. During the transition from Nashville to New York, I knew I had a drinking problem. It was brought to my attention by many of the people I toured with. But I was like, they don't know, you know, when I have a drinking problem, I would know they should maybe butt out and mind their own business. Right. Like you guys see me a few hours a day, like whatever.
That's how you know you have a problem.
Right.
When other people should butt out and find their business.
Yeah. And
that's a sign.
My parents had always warned me, you know, alcoholics have run in our family. It didn't go to me, of course, because that was that didn't happen to me. I was in a Christian rock band, you know, so I'm safe. So I was told I need to, you know, in order to make my marriage work, I maybe need to cut that back on that. So I tried, I think for 3 months, I tried to go without drinking. So the transition from New York or from Nashville to New York, I didn't touch the booze for 3 months. I was like, okay, New York, new start, fresh lease on life. So that lasted, I think I lasted almost 3 months, and then it caught up to me again, but it actually got way worse. I didn't know that was a thing. So that took a bad toll on my life, my personal health, my mental health, everything. Yeah. So I guess you can kind of picture where I was at. Career-wise, it was just a weird thing. So my wife had left and moved to New York. I stayed and was failing miserably at everything, to the point where I was like, I have to move back to Canada. I'm going to have to move into my parents' basement and just kind of figure life out. And that was it was a weird, but I was kind of excited at the same time. Like, because like when you're here, like nobody cared about Hawk Nelson when I was here, right? Like, I remember specifically playing in Holland, and we played for like, it was tens of thousands of people in like this sold out like arena, like a soccer stadium. And then taking a flight back home, and my dad picked me up from Toronto Airport. And then we stopped off at Walmart in Peterborough here. And I remember the cashier, the lady, just giving me grief because, I don't know, I was just a punk kid to her. And I was like, if you knew where I was last night, I was just playing to like 25,000 people in Amsterdam. And now you're yelling at me because you think I stole a pack of gum from like the shelf. I'm like, this is amazing. But as weird as I kind of love that about Peterborough. Like, there's times, not as much now, but like you come back and someone run into you in the mall, like, hey, it's really cool that you're here, like, you home from tour? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, cool, we'll see you later. And that was it. And like, and that didn't happen very often. Most times people just whatever, they don't care, and I love that.
Do you remember when we first met?
I don't.
We met, I think, in 2009.
Was it the mall?
No, I was doing like a men's study group with Matt and Dave Clark and Dale Strano and a whole bunch of guys and George, and you came out one night.
In a house,
remember?
Yeah, I remember the house. I don't remember who's all there. I went with Matt.
And I'm like, hey, I'm Todd. And you're like, hey, I'm Jason. I'm like, oh, what do you do? And you go, oh, what's the name of your act? And you're like, Hawk Nelson. I'm like, yeah, I never heard of you.
There you go.
Because I was fresh, new believer.
Yeah, but see, that would never bother me. Because I assumed nobody would even knew who we were. I didn't realize how big Hawk Nelson was until I was out of the band. I had no idea. I thought we were doing okay for ourselves, but I was like, okay.
I know who you are now.
See? Sorry, I was rambling, and I forget what we were even talking about, what the question was.
Well, you answered it, but you're just saying how you had come back to Canada now.
Yeah, so...
And we're glad to be home and...
Yeah, so my wife and I had talked about, like, we knew what was going to happen. It was inevitable for us that we were going to get divorced. We both grew up in Christian families. Her dad was a pastor, and I was like, I don't know how to tell my parents this. So I came home so many times to kind of, you know, like, hey, like, how's it going? And again, not a good communicator. My parents are always picking me, hey, how's it going? Oh, good. Yeah, good. And I would never get it out. I've never let them know that I was ailing or anything. And then I'm like, okay, this time, like, January, I was like, okay, I'm going to fly in. I'm going to let them know. And it's going to be just peachy, you know? So I got home, and it's January. And of course, so in my family, I've got five siblings and a close, tight knit family, but January is like birthday month for my family. It's my mom's birthday. It's like three or four of my siblings' birthdays. So we would just do one big party at the end of January for everybody. Right. So I showed up for this party, and I'm sitting there, and I'm just like losing. I'm like, okay, I have to let them, I'm going to let everybody know. I'm going to break down, start crying in front of everybody. This is going to be super uncomfortable, but it'll be healthy. You know, and then I'm like, I'm not doing this at a party. There's no way. So I didn't do it. And, so I ended up flying back to New York. I actually flew from Porter in Toronto to New Jersey, take a cab from Jersey to New York, to the city. And I lived right in Midtown in Hell's Kitchen on West 49th Street. And there was a bar at the end of my street, which I could get there in about 40 steps. So that was not a healthy, like, they brought in the NHL center ice package for me. That's how much I was there, at an Irish pub. And, So I was like, I'm going to go home to my empty apartment. I had my suitcase. I felt like an idiot. I looked like an idiot. And like, you know, I was like, I'm going to go. All right. Rather than go home, I'm just going to stop for a quick drink at Malloy. Say hi to Johnny. He was like the bartender there. And then I'll just go home and call it a night. You know, I'd flown for a couple hours. I was tired and spent the morning with my family. So I was walking into the pub with my suitcase, my little carry-on. And I sat down and Johnny knew me by name. He said, hey, man. He's like, you want a harp? That was kind of my drink of choice there. I'm like, sure. I'm like, I'll get a burger too, Johnny. So he's like, make me a burger. And he's like, hey, I want you to meet our new bartender. It's her first day. Her name is Neve. I'm like, hey, Neve. She's like, no, Neve. She's thick Irish accent. And I was like, you know, classic Jason Dunn fashion. I'm like, are you asking me to leave? Like, you know, like I've got like, you know, I can't not make jokes. Everything in my life is a joke. So whatever, we were chatting. She was pleasant, you know, she was pretty, you know, and whatever. That was kind of the thing. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to call it a night, guys. Nice to meet you, Neve. See you, Johnny. Probably see you tomorrow. Went back the next day and she was there and I was like, okay, we chatting it up. I was, you know, dealing with a lot of internal stuff. But whatever, you don't let that stuff out. But, a few months had gone by, I was living alone. I was technically legally married, but in a separation. I hadn't let any of this on to my Neve or Johnny for that matter. Cause you know, Johnny was like, hey, how's your wife? And I'm like, oh, she's good. I'm very surface level. Like people would always ask, I'm like, yeah, we're good. Yeah. Everything's great. You know, my parents would ask, yeah, perfect. Yeah. She's in LA right now working, you know, just keep it surface level. Which catches up with you, by the way. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, it'll catch up with you.
Yeah. It caught up with me. So anyways, I was wrapping up a few, Neve and I had gotten, you know, our relationship had just kind of, it didn't blossom, but I was spending a lot more time at Malloy's and I spent a lot of time there prior, but I was going there for lunches now. Like, hey, how's it going? The pretty bartender's working today. And so just I kind of told her like, hey, like, I'm getting ready to move back to Canada. And she's like, oh, really? I'm like, yeah. And so it was my way of like, hey, this is nothing is going to happen with this. Like whatever there was some sort of chemistry, I guess. And I was just like, whatever. I'm moving back to Canada. I'm just going to get some work there and figure life out. And she didn't know I even played in a band. I was just, I'd learned not to tell people that out of the gate. What do you do? Oh, I'm in a band. I've never been that guy. And so anyways, fast forward, I ended up driving to my parents' house in my truck and all my stuff, all the stuff that I had left. I didn't have a lot of stuff. I had a couple of guitars and a small carry-on suitcase. I'd basically played in a band for 12 years, so I didn't have much anyways. I'm still a guy with not a lot of stuff, and I like it that way. But I showed up in my truck, and I had a suitcase and a couple bins of old merch. And my mom came out and I told her I was coming home, but she didn't know for how long. And then when she saw my truck loaded up, she looked at me and then that's when I just broke down and I let her know. I'm like, can I move in? It was just one of those weird, things. And she knew right away. And, I remember my dad, he was like, oh, called it. It was like one of those weird, they obviously they had been talking about it at some point that my marriage wasn't going to work and my dad had called it, which is kind of funny, but it's kind of
sad. It is funny because it's usually the women that know that.
Yeah. So
the men are oblivious.
Well, my mom probably knew too, but wouldn't have said it like that. But anyways, I was like, can I just move in the basement for a little bit? You know, I was like, so that was a really good, a good release, I guess. So I kind of set up shop in my parents' basement for about 3 months. And it was weird. I'm like 31 years old living in my parents' basement. I'm like, I am that guy. I'm like, I can't believe I'm that guy. I was like, I don't know what to do. So sorry, I had come home for my sister's wedding. That's the main reason I came home. And then I just told my mom, like, yeah, I think I'm just going to stay. That's how the whole thing started. But I wasn't lying. I was going to stay. So we had done a thing for my sister's wedding, like the rehearsal or whatever. And we were driving back. It was up up in the country area, like off the, on the, on Chemung Lake. So I was driving my mom back to their house, our house. And there was a little hardware store. I'm like, hold on, mom. I'm just gonna pull into this hardware store. It said now hiring. I'm like, I'm gonna talk to the manager here because no one knew I was in a band. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'll tell you what. I'm like, if I can get a job here, I'm like, I'm gonna move back permanently. Even though in my mind I knew I was not going back to New York. So I walked into the hardware store and I asked for the manager, and I'd never applied for a job before. The last time I applied for a job, I was probably 13 or 14 years old. So I didn't know. I printed off a resume, and my resume was not great. And I asked the old lady at the counter, I'm like, hey, is the manager in? She called him down. He's like, how's it going? I'm like, hey, my name's Jason. I'm like, I'm looking for a job. I wonder if I could work here. He's like, do you have any experience? I'm like, no. So I handed him my resume. Here's what I got. And I remember just looking at my resume, just reading it over, and he's like, so you sing in a band, huh? Like, yeah. He's like, huh, interesting. I'm like, but I'm good with people. Like, that's the one. That's like, I'm not even that good in a band. I'm good with people. Like, I'll chat for days with people if that's what you need. You know, I'm helpful, I'm sure. He's like, you know what? He's like, I have a 30-year-old son, and he's been trying to go pro hockey, and he's had too many injuries. He's like, and he's not going to be able to go pro. And he's like, this is what I'm dealing with my son right now. He's like, so I understand. He's like, I'm going to give you a shot.
That's cool.
So John, his name is John. He gave me a chance, and I worked at this hardware store for a year, and I hated it. But I was like, you know what? Maybe this is my new thing, and I'll just figure it out, and I'll do it to the best that I can. I learned a lot. I didn't even know what pressure treated wood was. So I was like, can you go out and get some PT? I'm like, yeah, sure. I'm like, sorry, what's PT? Like, pressure treated. I'm like, okay. I'm like, sorry, is that the that's a 2x4? I'm like, no, it's the dark colored wood. I'm like, oh, okay. So I knew nothing. So like, I'm not handy, but I learned like a little bit of stuff over that year. But in that time, Neve had contacted me, being like, hey, she's like, me and Aoife, who was another bartender at the pub in New York, were like, we're actually going to upstate New York. We're going camping. Would you be interested in like meeting us? It's close to Canada. I'm like, it's like 5 hours close to Canada. Like,
yeah, not at all.
But I was like, yeah, I guess I'll go. So I ended up driving 5 hours to Lake Placid to go camping with three girls that were like hippies. And I was like, oh gosh, this is such a bad idea. But I went and we had fun and whatever. And then she started flying into Toronto and I was like, oh, okay. I'm like, this is painful. Like, what am I doing? You know, I don't know if you've been in that predicament. You're like, what am I doing? But anyways, we never dated. I mean, we kind of did, but then I started asking these questions. I was like, hey, I'm like, just so you know, I'm like, I'm going through a divorce right now. And I was like, I opened up. I need to be straight up with this girl. I'm like, if she's kind of into me, and I'm kind of into her, I'm like, I'll just tell her straight up. I figure open the lines of communication, because I knew that was something I needed to work on. So I told her everything. I'm like, I played in a band. It gave her all that whole backstory. I was like, whatever. So anyway, she started coming to visit more frequently. And then my mom was like, hey, who's this Irish girl that's been coming out? And I'm sorry, at this point I had moved into my parents' house. I got my own apartment, and you know.
So she like flew into Toronto just to come visit you?
Yeah. And she was doing this like every couple of months at this point. And so whatever, I was like, okay. And at this time I was like, I was in my mid 30s. I was like, okay. Like, I remember just asking her straight up, forward as anything, like, how many kids do you want? Because that was something in my life that was like, that was a close hand thing for me. Like, I wanted a family. And in my previous marriage, family was not, she didn't want kids. She had a career, and her focus was her career. And in her defense, I completely understand that. In hindsight, I wish we had that discussion before we said I do. But family wasn't really a thing for her. So the family was everything for me, and I wanted a family. And so I'm like, how many kids do you want? And she's like, whoa, like maybe four kids. I'm like, oh, that's how many kids I want. Four kids. So anyways, I was,
I ended up flying to Ireland with her because she's from Ireland, and she would fly back to see her family, whatever. And she's like, "Would you ever want to go to Ireland with me?" And I was like,
"Sure, why not?" Well,
who doesn't want to go to Ireland?
Yeah, so I ended up flying to Ireland with her, and actually on the flight, some girls stopped me in the airport or on the plane. I was sitting there, and they're like, "Hey," they're like, "You look like the guy from Hawk Nelson," and classic. And my or Neve is like, she's like, "What? Like, what is going on?" I'm like, "Who?" I'm like, "What's that?" It's like, "It's a band." And I was like, "Oh," I'm like,
"Oh, you played that off?"
I'm like, "Well, is he handsome?" They're like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Oh, well then." I'm like, "You just made my day." And then I didn't even say anything to them after. And then I felt so bad because they probably knew, but they're like, "What a jerk." But I was just trying to be funny. But anyways, Neve was like, "I can't believe that just happened." Anyways, we technically, I guess at this point we were dating. I met her dad and I was like, "Is this the point where I call you dad?" And he was like, "Oh," like ridiculous, stupid, classic Jason Dunn fashion. Anyways, my mom at this point had been trying to get me to go to church. And I'm like, "Mom, I am over that. Like, church was a cool thing, but I just, that is not where I'm at in my life right now." So we're approaching Easter, and Neve had come to visit again, as she always does. Borderline stalkerish, if I think about it. But my mom is smart. She's a good woman.
I get the feeling it paid off.
Well, yeah. So my mom, instead of asking me to go to church, she asked Neve.
That's the way to do it.
"Hey, why don't you guys come to church? Two of my brothers married two sisters, and their dad was a pastor at Northview Church here in town. So they did this big Easter thing, a big celebration."
What's his name?
Scott Cooper. Do you know him?
I know Scott quite well. I love Scott.
I love Scott too.
He's awesome.
He is awesome.
I hope you're listening, Scott.
I feel bad for his daughters.
Name dropping.
Yeah.
Scott Cooper.
Scott Cooper.
Great guy.
ScottCooper.com.
Carry on.
So anyways, I was like, she's like, "Oh yeah, we'll definitely love to go." And I'm like, "All right, I guess we're going to church on Easter." So, I mean, it would have been the thing to do anyway, just out of, you know, respect. So we went to Northview Church, and it's an older congregation, like I think is safe to say. And my parents, in typical mom and dad fashion, they were sitting in like the second row at the very front, center row. And I was late, and we walked.
But you're closer to Jesus there.
Well, apparently. So we walked up, I'm like walking up the center aisle. I'm like, "Oh my gosh, Mom, why are you, of course you're going to sit in the middle of the pew." So everyone's wearing their Sunday's best. I was probably wearing this. I have like three shirts and they're all black and like two pairs of skinny jeans. So we walked in that.
I have the same wardrobe.
I know. That's Amen. Why I like you. Yeah. Less is more. So like they're all sitting and I'm like, excuse me. And you can just feel the eyes like, "Oh, look at these two sinners coming in, you know, like guys wearing jeans in church on Easter." Like, "Oh," and they're all just like, "Oh, he's going to get saved. This is the day. And, how long have you been a Christian for, Todd?
Since 2009, bro.
Okay. Are you familiar with Heaven's Gates, Hell's Flames?
Well, there's flames in hell, and
oh, no,
Peter's at the gates,
the
right?
Skit, the
no, production. I'm not.
Okay,
no, I'm
so
not.
I assume it's North American, but it starts in the States. It's this big production that they require like church local volunteers to put on the production, but they give them the script. Basically, it's your generic like stereotypical good person dies, goes to heaven, but then it shows a guy like drinking and driving, he crashes his car and he ends up in hell. It's the scare tactics that really, you know, like, "Oh my gosh," like
that wins a lot.
Yeah, you know, like the guys that stand on the street corner and telling them they're burning in hell if they don't repent. It's kind of like that. And I knew that when they said it was this production, I was like, "Oh my gosh, I remember this, like our church do every year." I'm like, "This is so cringy. I've got like this new kind of girlfriend, this girl I'm kind of seeing who didn't grow up in the church. And suddenly she's basically being told that we're going to hell because we don't go to church." And I was like, "Okay, well, she is definitely going to dump me after this." I was like, "This is the worst possible scenario." We're sitting in the front row. And so what after the hour long production was over, Scott came to the front with his mic. He's like, "All right, you know, let's bow our heads and like, you know, if this is a time, you know, if you want to make your life right with Jesus, repeat, we're going to do this prayer together and you can repeat after me. So we're all, I'm out of respect. I closed my eyes. I did the classic, the look around to see, you know, like, and you know, everyone's repeating the prayer. Even Neve was repeating the prayer. And I repeated the prayer because that's, I know that's what you're supposed to do. And he's like, okay, we're going to take a few minutes here. And he's like, and if you made that decision, he's like, will you just raise your hand? Just wave at me so I can see it. So I had my head down and I wasn't even thinking about Neve. And I just felt
this.
She's like, so this makes me cry every time. But she's like, hey, she's like, would you go to the front with me? And I was like, what? Like, I actually couldn't believe it. I was like, yeah, of course I'll go to the front with you. And I went and stood at the front with her, and I don't think there was anybody else up there. There might have been one or two other people, probably not wearing skinny jeans. Oh, but we went up to the front together, and I just put my arm on her shoulder, and we prayed together. And at that moment, I was like, this prayer wasn't just for her. It was like something inside me changed. And I've told this story 100 times and I can't tell it without this happening. But it was a life change that happened. It didn't happen over like a growth period. It happened instantly. And you read about transformation in the Bible, and that is exactly what happened for me. I knew instantly that I had changed inside of me, that everything that I knew as a kid actually came life to me that morning.
Come on.
And I was a different person, and I knew it. So we got saved that day.
Praise God.
We went to Chapters downtown or whatever, down off Lansdowne, and we went and bought Bibles and a bunch of devotionals. And the thing that was one of my favorite parts about this story is a guy that I worked with in the hardware store. I hadn't worked with him a whole lot. He was an older guy. He was like a retired guy that still worked, that just kind of helped out a couple hours a week. And so I didn't work with him a whole lot, but we were offloading a truck, and he looked at me and he's like, hey man, he's like, you're one of those Jesus guys, aren't you? and I just looked at him and I'm like, what makes you say that? He's like, I don't know. He's like, there's just something different about you that he's like, listen to me. He's like, I went to Bible camp when I was a kid. He's like, and I went to the front because he said, if you went up to the front and asked Jesus in your heart, you'd get a free ice cream cone. He's like, and I went up to the front so I could get an ice cream cone. He's like, I know that you're one of those Jesus guys just by looking at you.
And like, in the skinny jeans. And
yeah.
The
like,
black.
I'm not a charismatic, like, preacher kind of guy, but that to me, that was the confirmation. I'm like, something has happened to me that is different, and I knew. So I started going to my siblings or a couple of my kids or a couple of my brothers and sisters' church in town, because you know they had been going there. I knew the pastor and his wife, and I grew up with them. So I started going there, and I was like, what can I do to help? They're a portable church, so I just started like tearing down the chairs, setting up the chairs, just stacking them, and they're like, hey, and they know my story about what I've done musically and whatever. So once I started going for a little bit, they're like, hey, do you want to help with the band? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, I'm not going to offer. I'm like, if you want that, I don't want to steal the show. I'm like, I'll play bass or whatever you need, you know? And so I started playing bass at their church and helping out wherever I could, which led to me starting lead. And then they asked me to join their staff, 6 years ago. But anyways, Neve and I, we stayed together. We ended up getting married 8 years ago at the same place my sister got married at. And we have 3 beautiful children. We have twin daughters who are 5, and our son Ryan is 7. And yeah, that's a huge answer to prayer. We're a guy that thought he was going to have nothing, thought I would never have a family. I thought I was going to run out of time. God has blessed us with 3 amazing kids. God blessed us with 2 amazing kids. Three awesome kids. And now I'm on staff at church, at Pathway Church here in town.
Bro, that's a great segue into this, dude. Starting over.
It's about my wife.
Bro, that's the whole reason for having this show. is just to hear that, and thank you for sharing that, you know, the vulnerability and everything, dude, but like the point where you grew up and you knew the right things to say at the shows when you were performing and everything, and that, you know, you have a drinking problem, you end up at this bar, but
I don't drink, by the way. I've been sober for 1 year.
Amen. But you know what's so cool, dude, is that like you went to that bar to have a harp or whatever you said, and like God's pursuing you. And just that moment when she goes up to the front, man, and the Holy Spirit, you encounter the Holy Spirit, the presence of the Holy Spirit, making him real. That's so good, man. That's so powerful.
It's awesome.
So good. So starting over. So this is your latest song. And dude, about Neve.
Yes, sir.
Cool. That's awesome. Dude, talk about share with us what's going on this year. You're going back on tour in 2025.
Yeah, I wasn't planning on it.
You weren't planning on sharing about it?
I wasn't planning on going on tour. Like, I'm still not sure if I even want to, but in the summertime, Letters to the President, our first album, turned 20, which is crazy, man. That's 20 years ago. Like, I think of albums that were 20 years old when I was a kid. I'm like, what's even weirder is you think about albums that I grew up listening to are turning like 25 or 30. I'm like, oh, that's not that long ago if you think about it, if you're comparing it to this 20 years. So I was like, we have to do something. Like, I didn't want to do it by myself. So I'd wanted to, in my brain, I was hoping Hawk Nelson would get back together with me as a front man. There I said it. I was hoping we'd have this glorious reunion for the 20 year, which even if we just do one show, which for the 15 year, we did Aid and Effect, me, Matt, and Dave, and we had a friend join us. And that was to do one show. That was our plan to do one show. We ended up doing four or five.
I saw one of those.
You saw it.
Downtown.
The show.
Downtown
that was
Peterborough.
The show we planned to do. Yeah. You were there.
Yeah.
You're a legend.
There, bro. Support, man.
See? But anyways,
love you guys, man.
So, favorite band, right? Totally. Us and Nickelback. So for the 20th, I'm like, I wasn't honestly going to do anything, but I was like, I have to do something. So I'm like, we're not doing the reunion, obviously. We have a Hawk Nelson. Every single person almost that has ever been involved with Hawk Nelson, whether it's been a lighting guy, a sound guy, a road manager, a tour manager, musician, we have this text thread, and we don't use it very often, but I threw the idea out of like, hey, would any of you be interested in doing like what we did during COVID? Like, you know, you'd record a part and we'd put together like a video. We'll redo just the song Letters to the President. Me and John will both sing like verses or whatever. Just give something to the fans because they deserve something, right? Like, these people have supported us and are still supporting even me for over 20 years, which is nuts. So, okay, well, you know what? No one responded. One person responded. Nobody else was into the idea, I assume. So I was like, whatever. I'm like, fine. I'll just set up a live stream in my basement. I'll take a guitar and I'll do two or three songs just to say thank you. So I had talked about doing this. And then I had one friend text me. He's like, hey, man. He's like, I bet you if you just did a show with your acoustic here in town, I was like, we'd come. I'm sure you'd get at least 10 people. Like, he was trying to make fun of me, but like, being cute about it. And I was like, LOL. I'm like, it's actually not a terrible idea. I'm like, what if I do? So I started, if someone gives me an idea and I run with it, it's just lookout world because you're not going to stop me. Basically, even if it's a terrible idea and I think it's a good idea, I'm still going to do it. Hence the Ferris wheel in my backyard. So that's a joke. Get it? Because like a Ferris wheel would be super crazy. And have it in your back. Okay. So I started doing it. Next thing you know, I have my friend Adam. He owns a venue downtown. And I was like, hey, man, like, do you think I could? I was thinking Shamong Lodge, actually, because he also owns Shamong Lodge. So I went, I'm like, hey, man, I'm like, do you think I could borrow like the patio, like the little stage in the patio for July 13th? He's like, yeah, whatever you need. Like, meet me. I'll take a look, see if it'll work for you. So I was like, okay, so I went there. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is going to be sick. You can probably squeeze like 30 people in here. It'd be great. It'd be a great night, and I'll just play a few songs or whatever. And then his other worker, Tommy, was like, hey, man, he's like, what if it rains? He's like, oh, shoot. I'm like, I didn't think about that. He's like, go to Dr. J's, which
is the other venue he owned. He's like, it's shut down. He's like, we've sold the building. He's like, but it's shutting down in September. So right now it's vacant for 3 months. It's closed. So no one can access it. He's like, but if you want, he's like, we'll give you the keys and you can do what you want and we'll set it up, make it however you want. I'm like, really? I'm like, you do that for me? He's like, of course. So he gave us the venue for nothing. And then I'm like, well, if I'm not spending money on the venue, I'm like, I may as well make some tickets. Let's make a go of this. So then I created like a little Eventbrite page and started selling tickets. And I ended up selling 110 tickets. People drove from New York. People drove from Michigan and Ohio. A guy flew in from Los Angeles to come catch this show.
Wow.
And the thing was, I wasn't trying to sell tickets to like just to fill it. I'm like, oh, it would look really cool. I'm like, I wanted to give back to people who were fans. So the idea and in my head was like, I want to show up. I don't even want a mic. I just want to hit one chord and everyone can just sing collectively as like a family. And that's what it was. I started with one song and everyone just sang and it was glorious and it sucked. It was glorious, but it sucked because I'm like, shoot, people still need this and they still want this. So I'm like, I can't stop. That's selfish of me. So that night I'm like, thank you guys so much. I'm like, I need to keep doing this. I said something along the lines of that. So then I have a guy, Jeff McCann, who's managing me now. He's here in Ontario and he came out to the show and he's like, we need to do something. I'm like, yeah, we need to continue this. So I just kind of ran with it. So I'm doing the 20th anniversary of Letters to the President. And right now I have about 6 dates booked in January, in the Southern US. And, it's going to be the same idea. I'm cutting the tickets at 50 tickets. That way, first come, first serve. We're going to pack out these little coffee shops in the US and we're going to sing our hearts out together.
That's awesome, bro.
I'm excited.
So good. Dude, thank you so much, man, for coming on and sharing your story.
I'm so sweaty right now.
It is about 1,000 degrees down here in the studio. But look over there. I got to stuff that wood stove.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's cold outside. Adam's favorite weather. We'll stuff it.
Yeah.
But, man, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for being really raw and real with your story, too, and sharing that, because I think it's really important. There's a lot of power in our testimonies to share that.
Anytime. I'm happy to do it.
Appreciate it. I always have a final question and I fade out with,
I like that.
Fade out with some good music. Nathan Kirshner. You know Nathan.
Oh, I love Nathan.
Nathan and Jess.
His dad is Rick Kirshner.
Yes, yes. Okay. I've just not met his dad.
Okay.
But I know Nathan and Jess well, and obviously, and we usually fade out to their song, but I kind of want to end with your track of Starting Over. But anyways.
Sorry, Nate.
Yeah, sorry, Nate. I don't think I'm going to end with Behold.
I like that, Todd, you set the bar real low. That way the next time you'll put Nate's song in, it'll be better. Okay, phew.
You know what? I'm going to do it anyways. I'm going to do both. I'm going to see how we can do both here.
Remix.
Okay, this is the green button. Okay? Mm-hmm. Final question for you, bro. If there's an up-and-coming Christian band that's like you, doing the same type of music, and runs into you and knows who you are, and they're starting out, and they're excited as you were in the beginning, what kind of advice would you give them?
Say what you mean and mean what you say. I didn't even have time to think about that. But that I think that would be a wise approach because it's really easy to get phony even if you don't know it. So that's be genuine, be authentic, be real, and be a good communicator. Maybe don't mention Jesus on stage so you don't sell a few t-shirts. Say his name when it matters and when it actually is legit. Is that an okay answer?
That's a great answer, bro. Thanks so much, man, and have a Merry Christmas.
Thank you. You as well.
Say his name when it matters. What a great story, friends. Even just out of how God just will continually pursue you. You want to walk away from everything and walk away from him, and he still pursues you even when you walk into a bar. I don't know if your intent was to get wrecked that night, but either way, he had somebody there. He's got a plan. He's got a plan, and he's just waiting for your yes. So we usually end with this song, Friends, but just want to end with starting over. So if your life isn't going the way you planned and things aren't working out, you can always start over when you pursue him. So we'll just finish off with Jason's song of Starting Over. I'd never make it as a DJ. That was a terrible musical segue. But nonetheless, on behalf of everyone at Disciple of City, Friends, thanks for listening to this season. Thanks for listening to this episode. Merry Christmas to all of you. Happy New Year. Get down to the States. Get down. Get some of those tickets to see Jason and hear some of that 20th anniversary of Hawk Nelson. Be blessed, everyone.